That was the longest 15 minutes, wasn't it? Very difficult to watch, and I think nobody knows more about the reality of war and the truth that's kept from us as American citizens and people who are paying the taxes and things are being done in our name than veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan themselves. And so I'd like to invite Carl Davison of Iraq Veterans Against the War for some words with us. Carl.
I love you. I'm Carl Davison of Bay Area Iraq Veterans Against the War and the New Radical Veterans Union. I served 5 years in the Marine Corps and 3 years in the Army. In March 2008, I refused to go to Iraq and was sent to jail after that. Just for your context. Brad Manning, apparently all y'all know what he did. Most of us vets were super stoked about what he did because it wasn't symbolic at all. He knew where to hit and where it counts based on his position, and he did it. In the Radical Veterans Union, we stand in solidarity with all radical veteran prisoners. It doesn't matter if it's Tom Manning or Brad Manning. They're all very important to us, and we still have thousands of dollars left to pay for his legal expense. I mean, as far as I know, from all I've looked up, Adrian Lamo, which would take Waymo, the snitch, the guy who snitched on him, is over in San Francisco. We should do something about that. In my opinion, snitches get stitches. I don't care. Sorry, I'm a little sick today. But, man, it's okay, I'll tell you about this. What can we say? There should be constant actions about this and about other people. I mean, just like the war with Mark Hall, Courage to Resist, and other people did a very good thing on that. But, I mean, what Brad Manning did was a perfect example of diversity of tactics. There isn't just refusing to go to Iraq. There isn't just, you know, protesting against the war, your service member, a veteran. There are many things you can do. And we should diversify our tactics and keep them guessing so they don't know what we're going to do next. So where it hits them hard, where it hits them where it counts, we should hit them in what is best for our capabilities and in our position. I want to thank you all for being here and caring. A lot of times it seems like, you know, no one really gives a shit about the veterans or people in the military. And it's true they do. And more and more lately, like, there's a new breed of post-9/11 veterans coming around. We're more radical. We're getting sick of just doing marches. We're getting sick of symbolic gestures. And we're ready to fight. We are seriously pissed off. And we will come around, and we are organizing, and we will destroy the military-industrial complex. Yeah, thanks for coming out, showing me support for Brad Manning. Thanks. That's all I got to say, I guess. Just keep in touch.
Of course, none of this is possible. Today's evening took so much work, and the person who is an instrumental part of the Courage to Resist and the collective CourageToResist.org, who's brought us together tonight to support Bradley Manning, is a war resister from 1990. Remember, he laid down on the tarmac in Hawaii, and he stood up and became an organizer and supporter of soldiers and veterans since then. Please give a round of applause for Jeff Patterson.
It's great to have a full house here. A lot of times, myself and the other staff and supporters of Courage to Resist, we do our work in our office just down the street, and sometimes it gets lonely, but there's always people calling. On the other side of that line, there are people that are making life-changing decisions, so whether they're going to go AWOL, whether they should go to Iraq, or whether they should go to Canada, whether they should go to Mexico, or whether they should go to Afghanistan, whether they should go AWOL. So that's, you know, that's our day-to-day life. But when we come together here, we start to see our strength. As project director of Courage to Resist, Bradley Manning is just the most current, relatively high-profile cases we've had the privilege of stepping up to support. Courage to Resist really began in earnest back in 2006 when a young lieutenant named Aaron Watata came to us and asked if there would be any public support if he chose to refuse to fight in Iraq. And I thought there would be public support. And within a year, we had 1,000 people protesting outside of the base in Fort Lewis when Aaron Watata refused to fight and was court-martialed. And because of our public support, Aaron Watata never did a single day in jail, and he's out of the Army now. We've worked a good couple hundred cases since then. In the last year, we've had a string of victories. Dustin Stevens in the Fort Bragg was a member of 50 people held in a punishment platoon for months at a time, some of them sitting a year languishing for court martials because they went AWOL, because they had PTSD and couldn't go back to Iraq, because they were misfits or outcasts. And we were able to shut down the building that they were kept in because it was moldy and was unsatisfactory even by military conditions. And then we got the entire platoon shut down when we started doing national, international media work. Last few months, we took on the case of Mark Hall, who was facing 5 years in prison because he wrote a hip-hop song against Stop Wasp when he was forced to redeploy to Iraq. And the Army wanted to put him in jail for 5 years because his hip-hop song was a little bit too angry at the Army. But Mark, with our support, got out of the Army. He recently got married a month ago, and he's trying to rebuild his life with his new wife and child. Alexis Hutchinson, who's an Oakland native, born and raised right down the street, she joined the Army like many people, looking for opportunity. She became a single mom while in the Army and decided to continue to serve. But then her mother got sick and her other caregivers got sick, and when she was ordered to deploy to Afghanistan, she had nobody to take care of her single child. And she called us crying, looking for some kind of way to take care of her child because she felt that her child would be abandoned if she went to prison for being AWOL. The military, after we got her a lawyer, still put her in jail, and they took her child and put her in the foster care system in Georgia. And it took, again, international outcry to shake the military to their senses. And finally, they finally discharged Alexis, again, with our support and because of local legal assistance with the military law task force out here. And that's how we're in a position to step up and to fight and support Bradley Manning. And I don't think any other organization was able and willing to step up and do this at a time. I really do think that without us and without the people in this room, Bradley would still be in Kuwait right now. He would still only have his military legal representatives fighting for him in a military court-martial setting. But the situation is much different. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the legal case and the updates from around the country, where there's 17 other events going on this weekend for Bradley Manning. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for supporting Courage to Resist.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks to Courage to Resist. And I want to, again, tell you that it's not just a packed house here in Oakland, but it's everyone on michaelmoore.com. I want to make sure and welcome you all in support of Bradley Manning today. You remember the outcry of our government after the release of this video and the threatened release of tens of thousands of documents through WikiLeaks. The Pentagon had something to say. The President had something to say. Congress had something to say. Don't release it. But it seems like in this time of war, when war is the new normal, the never-ending war that we're supposed to pay for and accept and damage countries and other people's lives and our soldiers' lives, and we're supposed to accept that up is down and black and white. But here tonight we say that blowing the whistle on war crimes is not a crime. Blowing the whistle. And we are people of values. We are people who believe that is not America there. That is breaking our laws and our values. That is violating life. What we watched on that video is not who we want to be in the world. And we honor the soldiers with the courage to tell us the truth. It is against international law and it's against our own law to kill civilians. And so blowing the whistle on that should be honored and celebrated. That is why we are here tonight. Let me tell you that tonight we are going to hear from three exceptional individuals who in their way have been inside of government, inside of military, inside the bureaucracy. And something in them changed them. They saw a light. And they're here to tell us why it's so important that in 2010, Bradley Manning continues that legacy. And I want to start by welcoming to the stage ex-CIA agent Ray McGovern, who's come in from Southern California and is visiting us today. And Ray, we honor you. You weren't ready for that, were you? We're ready for you. Ray McGovern.
Wow, it's great to see you all out here tonight. I'd ask you to take a little minute out just to kind of look around you and see what fine companions we have. Passing by the exit to Cesar Chavez Parkway or wherever it is, I was reminded of his constant admonition to us, there are enough of us. There are enough of us. We need to get away from speeches and articles. Action is what's needed. Without action, nothing ever happens. I guess one is supposed to keep words careful when people are accused of things. But let's not keep saying alleged and all that tonight. Let's just assume that what the Army has charged Bradley Manning of doing with respect to the gun barrel photography with sound that you've just seen, let's assume that he did that. And if he did that, he has already earned, in my view, a place of honor in American history. For his courage in exposing atrocities. I was just on Martin Luther King Jr. Way, and I was reminded that Martin said some very relevant things in this connection when he talked about our duty to expose deceit and injustice. In that masterpiece of American literature, which Martin wrote in the Birmingham City Jail, he said this, quote, like a boil that can never be cured as long as it is covered up, but must be opened with all its pus-flowing ugliness to the natural medicines of air and light, injustice must likewise be exposed with all of the tension its exposing creates to the light of human conscience and to the air of national opinion before it can be cured. What Private Manning is alleged to have done with the help of WikiLeaks is to puncture that boil of deceit and injustice. I think what we have in the WikiLeaks gun barrel photography that we just saw is a document that shows us what's really going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, otherwise known as the truth. What were his motives? Well, what did he say? In his blogs, he said, I want people to see the truth, because without information, you cannot make informed decisions as a public. He hoped to provoke worldwide discussion, debate, according to his logs. When he visited the United States on leave in January, he talked to a friend, Tyler Watkins. Watkins said he was very troubled, that is, Bradley was very troubled. He was trying to figure out the right thing to do. It was something that he was really struggling with because he had seen some incredible things, awful things. Manning passed the video to WikiLeaks in February, allegedly, and after April 5th, when the video was released and made headlines, Manning got in touch with Watkins, his friend from Boston. He wanted to know, what's going on? Did the media say anything? Was it going to make a difference? He wanted people held accountable, and he wanted to make sure that this stuff stopped, that it didn't happen again. Now, what did the media do with this? Well, after the initial stories, which even the New York Times ran, I think mostly because the Guardian in London and Der Spiegel were also running the stories, what happened in the mainstream, so-called mainstream media, which I like to call the fawning corporate media. In that media, we never see photos. And that makes it very, very different from our experience in Vietnam. Those of you with a touch of gray in your hair, remember those horrid photos. What I call the napalm-covered young girl, naked, running down the path. The chief of police shooting the brains out of a suspect at like 2-inch range. And of course, Kent State. So we're deprived of any first-hand accounts. And I'm going to make a little digression here, which is not really a digression. I have two grandchildren here in Oakland. And one of them, Claire, when she was 4, saw me on a talk show as Lehrer. And her mom, my daughter Kathleen, and she were watching it. And when it was over, Claire ran up to Kathleen. She said, Mommy, Mommy, that was Grandpa. And Kathleen said, yeah. She said, well, Mommy, that means the other people are real, too. Okay, think about that. That's really cute, isn't it? Think about it. If you don't know someone in the picture, the other people aren't real too. And so many of the Americans that I talk to not only have no one in the picture, don't even know anybody that has somebody in the picture. It depends on where I'm speaking. If I'm speaking in an affluent suburb of Washington, that's the case. If I speak at a Baptist church in Greensboro, North Carolina, more than 50% have immediate family in Iraq, Afghanistan, or wherever. That's the kind of poverty draft that we have. Well, let me continue in this vein here. Let's see what the New York Times said the following day. Here's Robert Becky.
As my colleague Elizabeth Buehmiller reported, a senior American military official confirmed on Monday that the graphic video released by a website, WikiLeaks.org, which shows American helicopter shooting and killing of Reuters photographer and driver during the July 20, 2007 attack in Baghdad, is authentic. One of the whistleblowing group's founders, Julian Assange, explained and defended the decision to release the graphic, the disturbing video shot from the helicopter during the interviews in Washington on Monday with Al Jazeera and Russia Today. Both of those appearances with Al Jazeera and Russia Today, and an edited version of the leaked video are available on YouTube. Parenthesis. Be warned that even the edited version shows people being killed. Period. Close parenthesis.
It's really interesting that that's the kind of treatment that the Times gave it and had to warn people that they were going to see for the first time in this conflict, quote, people being killed, end quote. And so they had to be beware, okay? Well, luckily, Josh Stieber and his sidekick Ethan, who were both members of that unit, talked about what really happened there. They said, now, you know, this was indefensible behavior, but be aware that he was only following orders, as we used to say. Those were the rules of engagement they were following. It was investigated, and it was deemed to be okay because they were following the rules. As long as you saw, as you saw there, a rifle in the picture, everyone was fair game. Those are our rules of engagement. And our Secretary of Defense, of course, said this was looked at and it was okay. Now, what Josh added is that, yeah, these rules of engagement are expressed in training by the adage, kill them all and let God sort them all out. Or the popular ditty that ended with, I earned my living bringing Hajis down to rest. One of the main points here is that if Julian Assange of WikiLeaks is not fed by the likes of Manning, we're not going to learn anything. And the proof of this comes in many ways, but one striking thing that many of you are probably aware of already, but you know, waterboarding is torture. It always has been, always will be, except between 2002 and 2008, according to the New York Times. The finding of this extensive survey, up until 2004, when waterboarding was referred to, it was always branded as torture, well, not always, just 81.5% of the time, okay? Now, after that, the Times called waterboarding torture 1.4% of the time. That's great, isn't it? We have the Times sanitizing culture for us. Now, I feel Bradley Manning really deserves a special accolade from folks like me who didn't show the courage that he had. And I'll refer to a personal experience here because I had a chance during Vietnam to do what Bradley Manning did. It's a long story, let me make it quite short. A colleague of mine, his name was Sam Adams, a crackerjack analyst, really, really bright, the consummate analyst, was given the task of counting up how many communists there were under arms. He spent 3 months at it, collected all the prisoner of war reports and all the other evidence, put it all together, and totaled them up, there were 600,000. But General Westmoreland, member of forces in Saigon, would only say that they couldn't go over 299,000. Yeah. So Sam went out to Saigon and was completely puzzled because they were summarily dismissing half of this platoon, half of that platoon, and so forth. And it wasn't until he got into the bar one night and one of the sergeants came up a little under the influence and said, "Now, Sam, I know you're having trouble understanding this, but you know, the general has his cap on. We can't have any more than 299,000 troops. Okay? We just can't count more than 299,000 troops. Now, why? Well, because the arithmetic wouldn't work out otherwise. We were killing, what, hundreds of so-called communists every week, and they were afraid that any correspondents that could do arithmetic could realize that they were down to nothing or close to nothing. So what happened? I asked Sam over lunch one time up at CIA headquarters. I said, Sam, what's the deal here? Why would the commanding general be so intent on not allowing the real forces, the real numbers to be used? And he said, well, guess what, Ray? We just got a cable from Saigon, from General Abrams. Abrams was Westmoreland's deputy, and Westmoreland had been traveling around. So here's Abrams commenting on Sam's figures which were universally recognized as valid, except by, of course, Army intelligence, who reported to Westmoreland. Here's what Abrams said in his cable. Find it here. The cable was August 20th, 1967, early in the war. And Abrams, in a secret eyes-only cable, set forth the rationale for the deception. The new higher numbers reflecting the accurate count, which was supported by all the other agencies, quote, were in sharp contrast to the current overall strength figure, about 299,000 given to the press, writes Abrams. Then he adds, quote, we have been projecting an image of success over recent months, end quote. And then he cautioned that if the higher figures became public, quote, all available caveats and explanations will not prevent the press from drawing an erroneous and gloomy conclusion. Well, there it was, folks, in black and white, the deceit of our top generals out there in Saigon, with a lot of deceit going on in Kabul, and was in Baghdad. So when Sam told me about that cable, my first thought was, that's beyond the pale. Somebody should go downtown and get that to the New York Times. You have to realize that in those days, the New York Times, we're talking 67, okay, the New York Times was an independent paper at that time. And actually, when it got a piece of information like this, it didn't go to the White House to ask if it's okay to publish it first, which it does now, by their own admission. They would like to publish it. Sure, sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know Sam wouldn't do that, and because he would go through channels. And so there was a tough decision for me. Should I take this cable down to the New York Times? There was a good chance, I thought then, and I think now. 1967, maybe 25,000 less U.S. servicemen and women would have been killed. Maybe a whole million of Vietnamese may not have perished. Because this was, this showed the chicanery, showed the deception right off the bat. And so I didn't stand up to that. I didn't meet that expectation. And, there's always the explanations you can give. Well, I have a mortgage, I have five kids, and besides, if I hang in, I can work from inside, and next time, when I get more senior, maybe I can make things right. Well, they're always there, because it's really hard to stick your neck out. Now, I've been accused of having something against necks, okay? I don't. Necks are very nice things to have. They're very convenient connections between head and torso. But if there is nothing for which you will risk that neck, then it becomes your idol. And necks are not worthy of idol worship. That's why I admire Bradley Manning so much. He thought this thing through. He was 22 years old at the time. I was 28. Maybe he didn't have a mortgage. What was that mean? What does that mean? He faced up to it. He didn't want this stuff to continue, and he thought he could expose it and that the press would run with it. Well, the press is not going to run with it unless it's Al Jazeera or Russian TV or press TV from Iran or BBC, which are the only people who will talk to me and sometimes Ann and others, okay? So we have to do it ourselves. There's a footnote to this, and it's a happier note, so let me leave on that. Dan Ellsberg is here, and of course we'll be talking tonight. And he, in his typically self-deprecating way, will will probably say that he wished that he had released the Pentagon Papers earlier, okay? 71 is when he released them. But in 1968, he was very much abreast of what Sam Adams was finding, like 600,000 communist troops under arms, okay? And so when he saw, from his own information inside the Pentagon, that Westmoreland had gotten approval from Lyndon Johnson to send 206,000 more troops into the theater, he said, you know, I think maybe I'll go to the New York Times. And he did. Went to Neil Sheehan, and he revealed Sam Adams' numbers. It really hit the fan. And 2 weeks later, in March of 1968, when LBJ convened that Council of Wise Men, in those days, they had the terrible notion that only men could be wise, and so they had a bunch of wise men there. And what he told those wise men was this, you know, I would have given Westy those 266,000, but you know, it's not possible now because our credibility is down the drain. Those damn leaks to the New York Times done us in. We got a tough tail here. And of course, at the end of the month, he decided not to run for re-election, and he started talks with the North Vietnamese and stopped the bombing. So Dan made a wonderful leak back in March of 1968, which prevented 206,000 more troops from going into theater, and it is possible, and Sam, of course, knew that, Sam Adams. The sad note that I'll end on is Sam Adams never forgave himself. You know, Sam would say to me, Ray, you know, the Vietnam Memorial, you know, if I had gone to the Times or some other media and told my story, chances are very good that the whole left side of that granite memorial wouldn't be there because there'd be no names to chisel into that wall. That's why. He died at 55 of a heart attack with great remorse, thinking that he let himself be diddled and didn't face up to what he really needed to do, which was to go public. Now, he did go public, and this is the last thing I'll say here. You know, when Sam went public, was when this fellow Ellsberg was being brought to trial for releasing highly sensitive numbers. And as Sam walked out the door to go to LA to testify on Dan's behalf, he says, Ray, they're gonna crucify somebody for leaking faked numbers? Give me a break. So the new opportunity that is offered by the existence of WikiLeaks, where somebody can put up something almost instantaneously and with anonymity, as long as you keep your mouth shut, that's a new phenomenon here. And we have been talking about the demise of the Fourth Estate. It has been defunct for quite some time, at least since the beginning of the Iraq War and before it. Well, that's the bad news. The good news is that there's a Fifth Estate. It's in the ether. It's not susceptible of control by corporations, by government, by advertisers. It's free, okay? We have to make sure that we do whatever we can to keep it free and to keep people like Bradley Manning, if indeed he leaked to WikiLeaks, to keep them both free. We have a little association in memory of Sam Adams. It's called the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity and Intelligence. And we give an award every year. Colleen Rowley is a recipient of that award. There's been a whole people, seven people so far. This year's award goes to Julian Assange. The nominee for the nominating committee was Anne Wright here, who always has really good ideas, well before Julian hit the front pages. I just want to say that it's a marker of the man that when we offer the award to him, He said, I will accept only on condition that I accept on behalf of my sources, because without my sources, I'm not going to be able to do anything. So our challenge now is to find a suitable time and locale to make the award. We're thinking of an ice floe around Iceland, maybe in November. If you have a better idea, let us know. Thank you very much.
Ray McGovern, thank you so much for coming to Oakland. We're here to support Bradley Manning. I'm so happy we're here, and we're here with everyone watching online at michaelmoore.com. A few, just an announcement. There's a Honda. Back to reality. There's a Honda. Here's your license plate. You're going to be towed. 6DKZ413. That's a Honda. It's yours. Go get your, move your car so you can come back in and continue our celebration tonight. We have two more outstanding speakers as we continue our effort to raise awareness of Bradley Manning's case and of the importance of WikiLeaks.com and also the importance of people standing up for conscience and exposing atrocities and war crimes, particularly those in the military or in government. And our next speaker is someone who knows very, very well from the inside of the military, as a former colonel in the Army and a former U.S. diplomat in Afghanistan, who resigned in protest after she saw the direction that the Bush administration was going. Colonel Ann Wright, we honor you.
And thank you to Courage to Resist for organizing this event here in Oakland tonight, and for all of those other 17 places around the country that are standing up for men and women who are challenging their government and their government policies. I was in the military for 29 years, 13 on active duty and 16 in the reserves. I retired as a colonel in 1996. I was also in the U.S. State Department for 16 years and served in Nicaragua, Grenada, Somalia, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Sierra Leone, Micronesia. I helped reopen the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, Afghanistan in December of 2001, and then was in Mongolia when in March of 2003 I joined two other people from the State Department who resigned in opposition to the war in Iraq. Well, today as we talk about Bradley Manning and about an act that he did, an act that some people in our communities and many people in our government say, well, this guy has broken the law. He has disclosed classified information. He has jeopardized the security of the United States by showing a film of war. How many of you all are veterans in the audience? Raise your hand if you are. Yeah. Well, these men, and probably there are a few women out here, they can tell you that probably many of them have seen something just like this. That in fact, this is not the abnormal thing that's happening, what you've seen here. That this is really what war is all about. And helicopters are shooting up people in Iraq and Afghanistan every single day. This is a common occurrence. And yet, how many of you all are seeing something like this for the first time? Raise your hands. Yeah, lots of people. Lots of people that think, well, you know, it's war. Those men and women, they're doing what they're supposed to do when they're sent by our government to Iraq and Afghanistan. It takes looking at something like this to see that those men and women don't really know what they're doing. If you look at that, if you see what was going on and you hear what those people in the helicopter were saying, how many inaccuracies did you see from their words to your eyes?
Where was
There were a lot of inaccuracies. There was a lot of lying going on there. There was a lot of covering the facts up so that people could make a game out of this thing. Make a joy game. You know, these kids that are playing games at home, video games of shooting up people. Well, you know, in many ways, that's what this is for these people that are standing off from what's happening. The true carnage of war, the carnage of innocent civilians being shot up, the carnage of arms and limbs going in every direction. And when Bradley Manning saw this as an intel analyst, and he saw this particular footage, and he said, this is, you know, this has to be seen. It summarizes so well what this war is all about. The deaths of innocent civilians, of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of civilians in Iraq, and for sure hundreds of thousands in Afghanistan, with the numbers increasing every single day. The next one we'll probably see is of a drone that's being shot. And you read about it, don't we? We read about those things where drones are being used to kill convoys, to blow up convoys filled with people. And most of the time, the military eventually has to come back to say, oops, there's a mistake. There's a mistake. We didn't realize that group of people were at a wedding, or those people that were in the three vehicles that were actually moving away from U.S. forces, that no one really saw a weapon in there. And indeed, there was a miscommunication that one of the intel analysts said, no weapons, adolescent men involved. And by the time it got to the ground commander, there are young militants in these vehicles, and they were blown up. That coming out on the front page of the New York Times just this last week. The clinical voices that you hear, I mean, wasn't it eerie? Wasn't it horrible that people are talking about killing other humans? Yes, two feet to the left, 2 feet to the right, one man on the ground, he's starting to crawl. I've got him in my sights. I can take him out. Now he's moving. Does he have a weapon? All of these are said by our friends, our brothers, our sisters that are in the military. Every one of those men and women that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, from Yemen, from Somalia, from Pakistan, you ask them about something like this. You show them this video, although probably most of them won't be able to sit through it because they've seen it. They're already having nightmares about it. What Bradley Manning has shown us is what those men and women are going to be living with for the rest of their lives. The killing of all of these innocent civilians, that is a war crime. It is a war crime what our government is doing to our men and women in the military. That is a war crime. And it's up to us. It's up to us as the citizenry. We are the ones that have to stop this stuff. Because there's too much money being made by the killers, the people that are doing the killing, the corporations that are making a killing on killing. They're not about to stop this. They are getting very rich out of it. But it's us that are the people that return, that the men and women in our military return to us. They're in our communities. They become from the helicopter pilots of Iraq, the Army helicopter pilots, the Marine helicopter pilots. When they get out of the military, where do they go? Well, they may become the helicopter pilots of your local police force. And as they're hovering above Oakland, California, and citizens are in vehicles, or there's a group of citizens protesting something, what about these flashbacks that people have? I mean, what we've created for our communities, of the men and women that will be returning to us, is a war crime. We owe to Bradley Manning a great deal of thanks. He knew what he was doing, as Ray McGovern said. These men and women who are the whistleblowers, who are the people like Sam Provance, who was a whistleblower in Abu Ghraib, Matthew Diaz, a whistleblower in Guantanamo, Colleen Riley, a whistleblower in the FBI, Jocelyn Radak, a whistleblower in the Department of Justice, They all know what they're doing when they decide to speak out about crimes being committed by our government. And that they are the people within the government that are saying to that institution, something's going wrong. Something's going wrong and we have to fix it. We're violating our own laws. And yet what happens to them? They go to jail. Bradley Manning's been in jail for several months now. He knew what would happen when it came out that he was the one, allegedly, to have given out this video. He knew what was going to happen, and yet he had the nerve and the courage and the bravery to go ahead and do it. Because he knew, he hoped, he prayed that this would make a difference. That we, the people of America, would look at this and say, we are not going to put up with this anymore. And that we would get energized and that we would make a holy, hell-less voice being raised to say, stop these wars. So if we want to do something for Bradley Manning, if you want to do something for Bradley Manning, of course, give to the fund here, but don't stop there. Put pressure everywhere we can. Make sure that those young men and women that are thinking about joining the military, those of you in the counter-recruiting movement, I mean, this, show them this thing. Show these men and women what they're getting into, what the realities are. There are other whistleblowers that we have, and I'll just name a couple of them. Jesslyn Raddick, one of the earlier whistleblowers that I mentioned, she emailed and she said, please, please, don't forget other people in our government that are whistleblowers that are facing very difficult times because the government's coming after them for their revealing to the public government wrongful action. Drake, Risen, Leibovitz, Kim, and of course, Bradley Manning. It's up to us to stop all of this. It's up to us to support a person like Bradley Manning. It's up to us to say that this will not happen anymore. That these wars have to end, and they have to end now. 7 years in Iraq, 9 years in Afghanistan. I mean, it is time that we mobilize strongly. That we say to this system, it's got to stop. That it must stop. And that we're going to hold people accountable. In just another month, torture is going to be on trial again here in Berkeley, California. And we need to support those types of programs to not lose sight of the fact that people are making tons of money on the criminal acts that they've committed. That Karl Rove is out and about selling his book. That former Prime Minister Tony Blair is out selling his book. George Bush is going to be coming out with a book. We need to hound these characters. There are where the war criminals are. So let's go after the real war criminals and let's protect Bradley Manning.
I so appreciate your spirit and your dedication. She literally has not been home more than a handful of days in years. She's been traveling all over the country and the world doing this. We honor you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We want to get down to the nuts and bolts of the legal case of Bradley Manning. Jeff Patterson is back to give us the details.
So the one thing we can do right after we leave here, we are gathering in San Francisco at 2 p.m. this Saturday, day after tomorrow, in front of the Veterans War Memorial Building, which is on across the street from City Hall. And we're going to have another speak out right there on the street with Ann and Ray. And then we're going to march through San Francisco, and we're going to end at Union Square and do a little outreach there at Union Square. So that's the next thing we can do after we leave here today. So we have a march and rally dedicated to not only stopping the wars, but supporting Bradley Manning. At Courage to Resist, we learned that Bradley was arrested in late June, and we didn't know anything more than some cryptic, small newspaper notices. And then I spent most of July trying to harass military judge advocate general representatives who were based in Iraq at the time. And I learned that Bradley was transferred to Kuwait. I tried to reach Bradley, like other members of Iraq Veterans Against the War helped out. And we fought for weeks harassing the jail in Kuwait to let us have contact with Bradley. We wanted to make sure that he knew that he had support if he wanted it. We wanted to make sure he knew that he had access to civilian legal attorneys if he wanted it. We reached out to his family over and over again. And eventually we broke through. Initially, his family thought that they were going to have to mortgage their home, that they were going to have to sell the family home for Bradley to have a legal defense. And we were able to win them over and say, that's not necessary. So last month, we started forming this international network, the Bradley Manning Support Network. And myself, I'm on the steering committee. Mike in the Slovak Republic is also a steering committee member. Rainey, who is watching us with hundreds of other people on the internet. Hey, Rainey. Is also a steering committee. Jerry Condon with Veterans for Peace, Chapter 92. So we are now, where it was told on by internet people, we have hundreds of people watching. We have 20 cities who are doing stuff this weekend. In the last 6 weeks, we've gone from organizers trying to raise, quote, a few dollars for Bradley so when he gets out of jail a long time from now, he'll have some beer money. And from that, we progressed to the point where Bradley now has a civilian legal defender. His name is David Coombs out of Rhode Island. And we selected the best attorneys that we could from around the country. And we provided Bradley with the options. And we provided his family with the options. And we said, whoever you choose, we will take responsibility for paying the entire legal bill. And that's what we're doing. So this might come as a shock to you, but we're actually going to hit you up for a little bit more money here. We asked for $5 at the door. I want to say that basically covers the expense of the evening, to be realistic. We've raised about $50,000 already. The actual, in the last 6 weeks, $50,000. And some people didn't think we could do it. Our legal fees are going to total about $100,000. And that legal case is going to unfold over the next 6, 8, 9 months. Bradley is facing his first hearings. These are mental health hearings, sort of a pretty common. And the media has made a big deal about this, that we're trying to say Bradley is crazy or he's insane or some nonsense like that. The whole point of these hearings is just to document that he is going through significant mental anguish leading up to his arrest. And if he is a WikiLeaks person and he was living with the, you know, the decision of whether to share this information, other information like that, I would imagine I'd be going through significant mental anguish too. Once that hearing starts, that'll take about 6 weeks for that hearing to finish. In the late around New Year's, we're going to have a pre-trial hearing, more likely, and then a court-martial could happen about March or April of next year, realistically, and things could change all the time. But that's it. We have a few tens of thousands of dollars left to raise. We have a pledge from Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, who is transferring a sizable donation to the Bradley Manning Defense Fund. And so with that, I think we have a chance of actually raising the last few dollars we need to raise.
So we must do something tonight, not only for the legal expense of this one soldier who is accused of doing something that has given us a view into the nature of war that we would not have. And for that, he deserves to have the very best legal representation. We must do that. Let me tell you, if I go back to my days as a senior in college when I was struggling with my own decision whether to speak publicly and whether to defy orders to go to the Persian Gulf, I developed stomach problems. I was so stressed out. I was afraid. And I also knew that I needed legal support because I didn't know my rights. And I was very confused about what it was that I should do or could do or had the strength to do. Well, a friend of mine hooked me up with an attorney, and we went to a pretty small rally about this size, downtown Palo Alto. the Peace and Justice community had gathered, and they put a mic in my hand. Now, I'm not somebody who's shy in front of a mic, but because of the seriousness of me speaking out against the military and being in the Army, I was shaking. I don't know what I said. But after a few minutes, a supportive friend took the mic and said, "Help Amy. Everyone do what you can." And they passed around a couple of boxes, old boxes. And by the end of the boxes came to me full of 20s and 50s and quarters and checks. And it was enough to pay my legal fees. I cannot tell you, as that 20-year-old young woman who did something I was very scared to do, how much having that support in small bills that did for me. It not only paid for my lawyer, but it bolstered my courage. You know what? People supported me. You know what? They want me to be supported. And we deserve, Bradley Manning deserves the same thing from all of us. It may seem like we're not that many, that we couldn't raise that many thousands of dollars, but I know, because I've been through it, that you can. So I ask you right now to take out your wallet, pull out those bills, or take your checkbook out for Bradley Manning and for the support that we want. We want him to have the very, very best legal support. We want him to know that Americans are not condemning the fact that WikiLeaks released a video that showed what our military is doing in Afghanistan, that we honor the people who are courageous enough, that we honor the people in the military who struggle, who see these things, as Colonel Wright said, who see terrible things and are trying to figure out how to do what's right. He has to have the right legal support. This is a huge international case, and right here in Oakland, you can make a difference. And so as we come around with our own version of the box, who are the folks that are collecting the money here? Make the check too?
To make a, there's two orange buckets going around right now for Bradley.
Where are you? Where's the bucket?
Where are those orange buckets? Buckets around there. Okay. You make a tax-deductible donation. Courage to Resist is the host of the Bradley Manning Defense Fund, and we are administering that in collaboration with the Bradley Manning Support Network. So to make a donation to Bradley this evening, simply put Courage to Resist on the check, and we'll know that all the checks collected here are for that Bradley Manning Defense Fund. Now, there's a small portion, about 25% of that will go towards administration fees, to political work, to leaflets and banners, and that kind of stuff. 75% will go to the defense fund. If you'd like all of your donation, 100%, to go to his legal fees, then you can make a check out to the letters IOLTA. I have a sign on the back of the table, so IOLTA/Manning. And that will simply mean that 100% of your donation offsets the legal fee without any administrative costs. So CourageToResist.org for a tax-deductible donation, or IOLTA/Manning for a non-deductible donation, but straight to the legal fees.
All right, and as those said, checks go out, I'm asking, we're all asking you, those of us who support Bradley Manning, who support the power of showing the truth to the American people, who believe that Bradley Manning deserves a fair trial and strong legal representation in this so important case, those of us who believe that a strong legal representation and defense of Bradley Manning's case may inspire or protect or otherwise help other people who are within the military and the government to do the same thing. Whistleblowers take incredible risks, and they should not have to bear the brunt selling the family home and things like that in order to have a legal defense, a good legal defense. So right here in Oakland, we can start it. I see the orange buckets coming around. Dig deep. Do what you can, because at the end of the day, where is he right now? What state is he in?
He's in Quantico,
okay?
In jail.
Okay, did you hear that he was in jail in Quantico? So he's in jail. Somebody's going to tell him, Jeff's going to tell him, about tonight.
I just want to add that I did talk to Bradley's attorney, David Coombs, today. And David spoke to Bradley today. And Bradley wants to say that he very much appreciates all the support he's gotten, and he, in jest, notes that he wishes he could be here with us. But he's very moved by the outpouring support internationally, and him and his family, you know, wanted to express their deep gratitude for coming out.
Can you mention how people watching online can contribute?
Either go to donate either tax deductible or non-deductible, both online via credit card, e-check, or in the old school postal mail check. Go to encourageresist.org/Bradley, and all of your options will be there. Encourageresist.org, bradleymannings.org.
Can they do PayPal?
PayPal is a little harder. The system's a little wacky. But we'll work with you for PayPal.
In just a moment, we're going to hear from one of our most famous whistleblowers, Dana Ellsberg, who is on deck to speak about the Bradley Manning case. But before we do, has everyone done everything you can to donate to the legal defense of this young man, still in his early 20s, who's sitting in Quantico waiting for his trial? Has everyone done what they can? Now, as this bucket goes around, I want to also ask you for something else, which is ask 5 of your friends or family members to go to the Bradley Manning website and donate to the legal defense for an amount as small as $5 to $500. Every cent matters to be able to pay for travel and legal expenses over this very important trial. All right. Without further ado, first of all, I want to thank you for your generosity. I love this community. I love the fact that we can come together like this. Give yourself a round of applause. Thank you so much for your generosity. Thank you. The history of whistleblowing has never been put in stark relief like our next speaker, Daniel Ellsberg, whose courageous release of the Pentagon Papers set a high standard and set an accountability as well as a model for a defense of the act of courage that we have been trying to live up to for decades. I want to welcome Daniel Ellsberg to Oakland. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Let me echo what you just heard. My wife, when I set out for this, said, how many people do you think will be there? I said, who knows? Half a dozen, what will it be? It's wonderful to see this place filled, standing room only. And I was thinking, who would like to see this? And I thought of a way to do it. I was just talking an hour ago to Bradley's aunt, Deborah Van Alston, who is possibly his relative who was closest to him, mother's sister, and who's seen him several times in jail. And she did want to say, I told her what was happening tonight, and she said, let people know how much he appreciates the support that he's getting. It means a tremendous amount to him. He was in prison, you know, in Kuwait for a long time, a couple of months. No communication with anybody. I don't even think he was seeing military lawyers at that point. Who knows what was happening, but no news, whatever. And until he got to Quantico, he had no news of how anything had been received. He didn't know how well, actually, the Times, Der Spiegel, and the Guardian had dealt with the early disclosures, which I think would probably be very important for him to know, or the reaction to the video and so forth. So when she sees him, it's through heavy glass with somebody listening at the side at all times, which brings back memories of what I expected to happen to me. People have asked me why I had my children help me copy papers for a couple of nights. It seemed very strange to them, and I can understand that. But there was a reason. At that point in the fall of 69, when I was copying these 7,000 pages of top secret documents, I really expected them to come out shortly through Senator Fulbright, Senate Foreign Relations Committee, within weeks possibly. And I expected to be in prison than within weeks, almost surely. And I knew, okay. Do I have to be behind this?
No.
Just in the light, right? Okay. I knew that what they would be hearing then within weeks was that their father had gone crazy. Just what Brad and Manning's friends and relatives are hearing right now, and what I suppose he's heard that, I'm sure. And that he was a traitor, but that he snapped, that he'd gone crazy. And I wanted my children to see before I started a lifetime, perhaps, of talking to them through glass, that I've done this because I thought it was the right thing to do in a business-like way, just something I thought had to be done, that I hadn't gone crazy. I wanted them to see me doing it. And so it just occurred to me, of course, Bradley had a technology here that I didn't have, which I'm very jealous of, I must say, if he did what he's accused of. It does imply, by the way, that the possibility of telling the truth about a policy that's reckless, criminal, murderous, disastrous, of various kinds. The power to change that by telling the truth is literally at the fingertips of hundreds, perhaps thousands of people. Just a few keystrokes can actually, the policy is vulnerable to that. They have to rely, the ones who are running this policy, have to rely on the trustworthiness, or as they put it, the loyalty, the reliability, the faithfulness, the patriotism, as in their eyes, of 1,000 people, of the even larger number who know what's happening, but the 1,000 who know that it's wrong, and who could change it if they told the truth. But they have to count on those people, and they do, and on the whole, I'm sorry to say, they're right to rely on those people keeping their mouths shut. The three of us here, you saw before, were all two in the Army, one in the Marine Corps, all in the services. We share a number of experiences together. And one of them is that there were times when there were truths we could have told that we didn't, and that could have made a real difference. And we've learned to be regretful of that, and to want to use our lives differently and to urge other people to do the same. Okay. Finally, when I first spoke to Deborah Van Elsen a month ago, after she'd just seen him, she said he had finally learned of the support. There's a Guardian article a while ago on the support. It was quite good. And he'll be learning of this. I asked her whether he knew that Michael Moore was campaigning for him and supported him. And she said, well, she didn't know directly, but one of the lawyers had mentioned that to her, so she was sure he had discussed it with Bradley. And that's very good. So as I say, with this all this new technology in the world here, I can now get your pictures to Bradley within days, because Deborah's going to see him this weekend. And it's just occurred to her, I have her email. So those of you who wish to hide your faces, because this is going over email, I'm copy to NSA and the FBI and whoever else. But there were 25,000 people who contributed to my trial. And so I have learned to appreciate that. I've been doing fundraisers for other people ever since, and never more enthusiastically than that. So another way to use that technology, of course, you may or may not have had much cash here. You may not even have had your checkbook, which would be even better. But at home, if you have computers, the Bradley Manning, what is it, .org? BradleyManning.org will give you a chance at PayPal to send as much as you can possibly send. And the people who are watching on the internet should now turn to your computers and don't bother watching me. It's much more important to send a contribution right now before you forget, or you have the impulse to this, because it really is essential. And so, here we go. Smile. Okay, now I can actually, with this wonderful device, send Bradley a video. So, how about, thank you for some of you for standing up for me. How about standing up and saying, thank you, Bradley. very good. That's virtually as important as, let's say, going to your computers and doing your own emailing and getting it to it. What are we thanking her for? We're honoring an American hero. I'm glad that Ray made the point here. Let's not go through elocution. We don't know the facts. We don't know the facts, and in particular, as I know, it's up to the government to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. And we can't hand it to them anyway. We don't know any more than they do, or less. But let's just assume that for once, the Army is telling the truth about what they accuse him of. They're hardly the last word on that, on any subject, but maybe on this one. Whoever was the source, and let's call him Bradley Manning, deserves our thanks and deserves honor. Not everybody, of course, honors him. I actually am very happy to see this room full, if not in Oakland and Berkeley, where, but I am glad to see it. And he'll be glad to see it. He will see it. But there are a lot of people who see him differently, obviously. And in terms, by the way, that are not very well grounded in American history and American principles, very thickly. I was just a few days ago in New York, a couple days ago, on a show called Dylan Radigan's Show on MSNBC. And he quoted at me in his brief interview an article by a guy named Mark Thiessen, who is a former George W. Bush speechwriter, obviously deserving of indictment, I would say myself, but and I'll explain why. Well, because he said that he's now a Washington Post columnist, of course. And so Radigan quoted him to me as saying, WikiLeaks is a criminal enterprise. Well, interesting that Thiessen would see that, since he's just retired from being part of a very large criminal enterprise, I would say, the Bush administration. I must say that let me give you a little piece of current history. Probably most people here don't know. Barack Obama, who said that he doesn't want to look back at the crimes or alleged crimes of the George W. Bush administration. He wants to look forward and move forward. And in effect has decriminalized torture, a war of aggression, warrantless wiretapping, obviously criminal under both the Fourth Amendment and the American domestic law at that time, years of criminal activity, renditions, kidnapping, indefinite detention, the suspension of habeas corpus, in effect meaning, which most people don't really have a very clear idea of that, meaning detention without charges indefinitely. We now have a president, actually, who has declared the right to detain people indefinitely that he suspects should not be out, even if they've been acquitted. We can keep them in other words, as well as before or without charges. Following in the footsteps, in other words, of George W. Bush, in virtually all these respects. Claims that torture has ended, but there's lots of evidence that it has not ended in Bagram and probably other secret sites of various places. The rendition, the kidnapping, still. And who's gone actually further than Bush in terms of open claims, the claim of the right through his intelligence chief at that time, Dennis Blair, who announced that the president had a hit list of American citizens and others that he felt were, that he'd given orders to kill, to assassinate, to execute, to murder abroad American citizens. Basically, I just happened in another connection to read the words of the Magna Carta of 1215 today. I've seen it before, I looked it up, but somebody else was referring to it. And the words are, no free man shall be deprived, shall be harmed, shall be destroyed, or deprived of freedom except by a jury of his peers. In other words, this is a wiping out of rights that go back to 1215, almost 800 years right now. In short, in these constitutional matters, we have an administration, and in the foreign affairs matters, that is a third term of George W. Bush. I'm not saying that's true in every respect. I'm not saying that the Republicans are not much, much worse. Actually, they are in domestic matters. Actually, they haven't been, Obama has not been strikingly better or different in matters of foreign affairs or constitutional policy. In fact, we thought we were getting something here with a constitutional lawyer, a teacher of constitutional law, Barack Obama. I haven't seen in the opinions his Department of Justice has been putting out any difference from the opinions of Berkeley tenured professor Chan Yu, YLA. And that's not rhetoric. The briefs are the same. In some cases, the judges were actually astonished that they were putting in the same brief. Hasn't there been any change? No, why should there be a change, said the Justice Department. Well, there's been an election. This is a quote from the judges. So, following in that footstep. Well, so on the one hand, you have this continuation of unconstitutional or criminal policies in many cases. Some of them have been formally legalized by Congress to no credit of Congress. Most of the things that were done against me to keep my mouth shut after the Pentagon Papers came out, to keep my mouth shut about Nixon's threats of nuclear war and policies, namely going into my doctor's office to get information to blackmail me into silence, legal now under the Patriot Act, setting the CIA to do work against an American citizen, psychological profile, illegal then, legal now under the Patriot Act, bringing people to incapacitate me totally on the steps of the Capitol on May 3rd, 1972. We have a president, as I say, who has announced his right to have his squad. When I said abroad, and really, it says anywhere, terrorist suspect, he hasn't really ruled out the United States. When I said that Julian Assange, while they were, quote, looking for him, when WikiLeaks first came out, was in some physical danger, a number of people said, oh, ridiculous. Well, I didn't say there was a high chance of that, of physical damage to Julian Assange. But having been a person who was the direct target of a hit squad for the White House in 1972, I'm hardly the person to say that Julian Assange is in no danger. It should be zero chance of physical harm from the United States. It is not, and that's wrong. I think Bradley Manning is safer now in Quantico jail than he would be if he were evading arrest in some form. A danger, he might then have been, I would say, of more physical harm than I feared when I was eluding arrest and putting out the Pentagon Papers. That's the way our country has changed. In other words, we're in a desperate situation in so many respects. I'm going to name one or two dimensions of that. A desperate time that calls for some unusual measures. Now, coming back to Thiessen, he said in a column in the Washington Post, one of his first columns, that WikiLeaks, that Julian Assange should be, he said, arrested abroad, despite whatever the local laws might be of where we happen to be, Sweden or Iceland or something. He should, in short, be kidnapped, as in our rendition program, and brought back to this country and face charges of treason. Treason, but Julian Assange is in Australia. But then he went on to say, and of course Bradley Manning, should be charged with treason. Ranking Republican member of the House Intelligence Committee has said that Bradley Manning, if he's done what he said and so forth, is guilty of treason and should be executed. And when asked, how about Daniel Ellsberg then? He said, well, I don't know all the circumstances of that, but if they're similar, they are, he should be executed for treason, okay, retroactively. Now, this... I don't think that will happen even if this man becomes head of the House Intelligence Committee, which might happen in November. He can't really change the charges of treason either. I'll come to that in just a moment. But he would want to, and we'll hear those charges. And I think, for example, we may very well get an Official Secrets Act if the Republicans come in, which I would expect, I have to say, Obama to sign. A Democratic Congress, where they were in 2000, who's controlling it? What's the Democrats were in 2000? Did pass, in fact, with the support of the Clinton administration, Department of Justice, Janet Reno, supported an Official Secrets Act for the first time in our history. Clinton vetoed it a week later, even though Reno had had supported it, saying we hadn't sufficiently considered it. If that comes up again, I don't think it'll be vetoed, whether it's to a Democrat or a Republican. That was before 9/11. And after 9/11, I think we could get an official secret act. Now, Brett B. Manning is subject to military law, and there's a strong case for in what passes for military law. A military court, a military jury, as Gray or Ann. What do you think would happen to a colonel, major, private, or whoever sitting on a military court-martial who acquitted Bradley Manning? I think their career would be on
treason.
What? They'd be on trial next to themselves. So it's a hanging jury, you might say, from this point of view. Not only did Radigan quote this all this to me from Thiessen, he didn't mention the House Intelligence Committee, but he gave a clip from the Most Dangerous Man in America film, Daniel Ellsberg in the Pentagon Papers, and the clip he chose was our president, then President Richard Nixon, saying, being asked in an interview after he was president, do you think Daniel Ellsberg committed treason? He said, well, let me put it this way. I would put it this way, a little differently. Daniel Ellsberg gave aid and comfort to the enemy. And so that is totally wrong. Well, he carefully did not say, yes, committed treason. He didn't say committed treason. He may have known what he was doing there, but he was giving what nearly all of his listeners or hearers would believe was the constitutional definition of treason. Aid and comfort to the enemy. You see that all the time with Bradley Manning. Aid and comfort to the enemy. As clearly a self-evident definition of treason. Actually, if you look it up, and I have recently, just to make sure, on the Constitution, the definition of treason in the Constitution has a phrase in it that it never seems to be recalled, which is crucial here. It says, treason shall be only levying war against the United States, comma, or adhering to its enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Now, as I said already, Bradley Manning obviously does not adhere to any enemies of the United States any more than I do. And obviously, what he wants to do is give aid and comfort solely to Americans. Not only to Americans, I go, but his probably basic thought, certainly his mind was to give aid and comfort to Americans, to the American troops who have been sent, in the words of Justice Black in the Pentagon Papers case, wrongly sent to distant lands to die of foreign fever and foreign shot and shell. And the way to give them aid and comfort is very clearly to bring them back. It is not to send them to Iraq or to Afghanistan. In fact, I was just saying this afternoon, there is some aid and comfort going on in our operations over there, very much so in Iraq and also in Afghanistan. Do you really believe that Osama bin Laden, who's still alive, wants the U.S. to stop occupying Iraq or Afghanistan and to stop killing Muslims? I don't think so. Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, the whole people who are enemies of the United States, very definitely, unlike, I would say, the Taliban, who are enemies of our presence, who want our presence out of their country. But, you know, in either Iraq or Afghanistan is Osama bin Laden's country, or most of the Al-Qaeda's leaders. Nothing could be better for them than for the U.S. to continue doing exactly what it has been doing under Bush and what it is now still doing under Osama, under... I think I've been watching Fox News. I don't trust myself. The fact is, we are spending $100 billion a year in Afghanistan to recruit for the Taliban. Is that really worth it? Well, that answers itself. But I don't think, actually, that Bradley Manning was mainly moved by the desire to save money, important as that is in a current situation. The fact is that the pictures he was showing and what he was reading, the accounts he was reading, he said horrible, almost crimes he's reported to have said to somebody. I think the almost is a euphemism. Julian Assange has been criticized, rather broadly, for giving the title or the headline to the video that he put out on WikiLeaks, Collateral Murder, to provocative, many people say. But again, I appeal, how many people here actually have been in the service, have taken oath of office? Can I see? And of course, Ann and Ray here, and I. Well, you know what we were trained should be the attitude toward an unarmed, to be sure, civilian clothes, but this is a guerrilla war, but an unarmed person, badly wounded, crawling away for cover without arms. Ground troops are on the way, which they were blocks away at that point. Aiming weapons at that person and shooting him down happened to be a Reuters photographer. But they didn't know he was a Reuters photographer. They knew he was an unarmed person, wounded, and crawling away. The word for that is murder. It is a war crime. It is murder. And beyond that, that was so typical of what goes on in this war and these wars. In fact, Karzai's first reaction to the video was, and oh, by the way, and to the release of these 90,000, 70,000 Afghan warlords that came out, Karzai, through his spokesperson, said, right, right on, that's what's happening, the killing of civilians over here. At last, it's been confirmed from official sources. I suspect that Bradley Manning saw that, in fact, we know from accounts of what he said, in exactly those terms, and that was the challenge to him as to what he ought to do about it. I felt that way 40 years ago. By reading the Pentagon Papers early form and discovered that we had been supporting a French colonial walking in the footsteps, not just in the footsteps, but paying for the French boots and the French soldiers, basically, who were occupying a former colony that had declared its independence, Vietnam. This war had been unjust from American terms from the beginning, and that meant that every person killed over there in that conflict, not just the civilians, by the way, everybody, was unjustified homicide, and that to me was murder. And that murder had to be stopped. Murder had to be stopped. That particular video was in Iraq. Apparently, they've also, WikiLeaks has also gotten a video of a massacre in Afghanistan, Ghani, where perhaps 187 people were killed, virtually all civilians, if not all, many women and children. And in Afghanistan as well, 9 years after 9/11, the Al-Qaeda, whichever remaining, having moved over the border to Pakistan, we have no right to kill anybody in Afghanistan. We do not have a right to kill anyone in Afghanistan. And to say that is to say that unjustified homicide. If anything is a euphemism there, it's the word collateral. Because it's the inevitable consequence of what we're doing, and the chosen consequence. Despite the fact that McChrystal was at least conscious of the desirability of lowering the incidence of civilians killed, knowing that every civilian we killed at least recruited a number of people for the Taliban and made the problem insoluble. Nevertheless, civilian casualties have gone up there. They continue. There's maybe fewer per strike, but there's many, many more strikes, and there will be many more as more U.S. troops come over. So the aid and comfort we've been giving them is to the Taliban in the first instance, where they want us to leave eventually, but in terms of their recruiting, and the longer term, to Al-Qaeda, wherever they are, in various places in the world, whose recruiting and strength depends upon our killing of Muslims in oil-rich lands where they happen to live. So what I think, both of those unjustified, reckless wars will go on unless and until we see an awful lot more courage of the kind that Bradley Manning has now shown, almost uniquely, I'm sorry to say. We'll need a lot of that, a lot more than we've seen from our government, from our Congress, from our media in general. If his example, and as I say, support for him is very helpful here, I can only hope that his example will inspire others. Without that, these wars are going to go on indefinitely. It may very well be, and he must know that, that the chance that what he has done, whatever it is, whatever scale, and there may be a lot more coming, will have no effect on the war, precisely because there are a lot of people who want the war to continue in the U.S. and others who do not have the courage to resist it. Barack Obama is no Bradley Manning. But who is in the government? Who in the Congress is a Bradley Manning? Well, Barbara Lee. And it's one person in Congress who is willing to say, in connection after 9/11, with an attack on Afghanistan, not without hearings, not without debate, not by an undated blank check delegation to the president of going to war when and how he wants. This should not happen. It's not constitutional. One person stood up, Barbara Lee, and did that. And next year, is this your district here? Anyway, you are blessed here as your representation. Then she and Dennis Kucinich, the next year, rounded up 123, I think it was, House members, 23 senators in the Senate, against the next Tonkin Gulf resolution against going to war in Iraq. And nevertheless, the others too cowardly to stand up, for even for their constitutional responsibilities to do that. So, otherwise, we're facing the possibility then of this going on for a very long time. If Bradley Manning pays a very high price for this, rightfully or wrongly, despite our support for the money that I hope he'll get, question, do you think he'll regret the time in prison? We can't know. We don't know him. I don't know him. But I think I do know him from what I've heard so far. I could change, but I don't expect it to. I think he's in the same mood that I was in 40 years ago. And I know that because one of the things he's quoted as saying to his person who informed him, actually, was, I'm ready to go to prison for life or even be executed, to put out the truth on this. Why? Because he thought that what he was doing, what he was claiming to this person he was doing, would end the war. Many people, quickly or surely or at all, many people thought I must have believed that when I put out 7,000 pages. I did expect to go to prison for the rest of my life. I was charged with a 115-year possible sentence, 12 felony counts. So I knew what I was getting into, and I did that. It was not because I had the delusion that this history of Vietnam, which ended in 1968 before Nixon came into office, and I put it out under Nixon, I wasn't under some delusion, I wasn't that stupid, to think that there was a high chance that it would end the war. And I doubt that Bradley Manning believes that what he does has any high likelihood of ending the war. I think that he probably hopes that it might wake enough people up to show some courage and take responsibility as citizens and as congresspersons and as officials to tell the truth, to say no to this, to get us back, that it might, and without this, it was very unlikely, and that small chance was worth his life in prison. Now that sounds, you know, when he says, I'd be ready to be executed, you might think, is that melodramatic? Execution is not in the cards here. Well, as I said, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, execute him. Former speechwriter, execute him. Quoting it, treason, which is susceptible of execution. And I mentioned that though he's in the hands of the military now, others are not, Julian Assange, some others are not, and there is danger, actually. But life in prison? Let me predict that his military prosecutors will ask for that. And he faces a real risk of that. I have not met a whistleblower who regretted what she or he had done. although most of them have paid very heavy personal prices. I didn't. Nixon's crimes against me actually led to the dismissal of my charges when they were exposed. That was kind of a miracle that they were exposed. It was not a miracle, not amazing that he took the crimes against me. He had to shut me up, just as I'm sure they want desperately to shut Assange up. Do they have the motive and the desire and the capability to kill Assange? Yes. Will they? Probably not. But is there danger? Yes. However, on the prison, I do not know. Many of these people lost their jobs, lost their families, actually because loss of income, loss of your children's education, the strain of all that puts a challenge to marriage that very few of them resist, actually can hold up to. I was very lucky on that point. My wife helped me in the process. She was a partner and it brought us closer together, really. But that's very unusual. So the price is high for truth-telling, and yet nobody I know has regretted that price. High as it was, and I don't think Bradley Manning was. I'm a friend of Mordecai Vanunu, who spent 18 years in prison for revealing the scale of the Israeli nuclear program, still denied by Israel, and by Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, we don't know, etc. For all the money we spend on intelligence, in this country, we don't know whether Israel has nuclear weapons. Well, Mordecai Vanunu took pictures of their nuclear establishment, showed it was much higher than even CIA knew, and he spent 11 and a half years of the 18 in a cell 6 foot by 9 foot isolation. 11 and a half years of solitary confinement in a 6 by 9 foot cell. He was just back in for refusing to follow the directives after he served his full sentence that he should not talk to foreigners like me, talk to me, of various others, and talk to reporters. They put him back in jail for months in isolation again. And I just talked to him a few weeks ago after he got out and said, you know, remind me, you know, something, but am I not correct? Has he ever come to regret anything? He did absolutely not. Not for a minute. Even though, by the way, you know, coming toward the end here, even though you could not say that that particular truth-telling actually accomplished very much. The Israeli nuclear program proceeds. They continue. I just saw a headline the other day I haven't read the story, that the U.S. was asking Arab states to stop asking Israel to join the non-proliferation treaty. Did I read that right? Okay, but you can't say that Vanunu cannot look back and say, well, you know, I made a difference. But he tried. Shortening this war is worth a prisoner's life. It's worth life in prison. We have 3 million people went to Vietnam, hundreds of thousands in harm's way and in combat situations there, and risking their bodies, risking their lives. We expect that of them, and we get it. It's virtually routine. We don't ask that of our civilian officials or our congresspeople to risk their jobs, their careers, their clearances, their access. We don't ask congresspersons to risk their next election to do the right thing, and we don't get it. And with the rare exceptions, such as the people in the Progressive Caucus, and the ones I just named, Feingold in the Senate, I would say, the one person to vote against the Patriot Act, as I recall, one person in the Senate. With the exception of people who will go against the herd like that, we don't get it. Unless we demand that of them, we will not get out of the desperate hole that we are in. And finally, he won't be charged with treason, though he'll be called a traitor by a lot of people, as he already is, as I was, as I am, it comes up all the time. And being called a traitor is a very, very unpleasant, especially someone who thinks of himself as a patriot, as I'm sure Bradley Manning does, and as I do. It's a very unpleasant. But if you're not willing to be called names in order to get us out of this hole, and most people aren't, we won't make any progress, as a matter of fact. When it comes to the charge, as I say, the people who make that charge genuinely have a very poor knowledge of American history. As I said to Radovan when he faced me with this Nixon and Comfort of the Enemy, Thiessen, etc. I said they're flirting with the word treason here. That's what they intend to imply. And I said, you know, this country was founded by traitors. A short silence. He looked at me. He looked at me. Rather looked in front of the camera, you know, a very nondescript face, a blank facial. I said, every one of the founders, every one of the signers of the Declaration, a loyal, patriotic subject of George III, the Emperor, in 1774, and a traitor, up to being hanged as a traitor, if caught by the British in 1776, having discovered in themselves a loyalty to the principles that became our Constitution, a loyalty to a republic, a loyalty to separating from the world's greatest and most liberal empire in the world, all of them traitors. The question is, who are you loyal to? What? Again, the three of us here who were officers and anybody else who was ever in the government takes an oath, every officer in the armed services, every member of Congress, every member in the government, takes an oath. It's the same oath for all the civilians and military officers. And it is not to a commander-in-chief. It is not to a Führer. It is not to the president, who is not named in the oath. It's solely to uphold, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Which, if I can say we, or I'll say I, was failing to observe in the years when I did not tell the truth when Congress was being elected, and finally learned to do it. The fact is, it so happens that Bradley Manning is an enlisted man, and they take a slightly different oath, which most people don't realize is different from all these others, and which does mention, in addition to upholding, supporting, and defending the Constitution, is to obey superior officers. Now, it's a little odd that the oaths are different because officers have superior officers too, but their oath doesn't mention that. So you have these two things, obeying superior officers and their regulations, and defending the Constitution. What almost nobody realizes inside the government is those can be in conflict. And that's not just hypothetical. It happens all the time. And it happened when Congress was lying into Vietnam, and it happened when Congress was lying into Iraq. And it happened in every aspect of the Iraq War, and it happens right now in the 9-year-old Afghanistan War. So it occurred to me Bradley Manning can be said to have seen the problem and to have shown loyalty to the higher loyalty to the Constitution here against the regulations and the orders and the agreements. In effect, he acted as if he had taken the officer's oath and believed it and acted on it, unlike almost any officer in the American armed services, who I'm sure virtually never occurs that there could be a conflict, and if there were, do what your boss, do what your superior says, do what the president says, I'm the president's man or woman, and so forth. Their priorities are screwed up to a man and woman, with few exceptions. Bradley Manning has acted like the officer Aaron Watata, possibly the single officer in the armed services who took his oath seriously and refused to go to Iraq, which he saw as an aggressive war, and was wrong to go. And, or Camilo Mejia, a sergeant who refused to go back to Iraq and went to prison for it. In short, finally, Bradley Manning was loyal to the Constitution, to the people of this country, to the families and troops, against his agreement to keep secrets, like my agreement to keep secrets. He saw the wrongness there. He is disloyal to the empire and to the emperor, as I have become. And without more Bradley Mannings and people like you who will support him with money and in a concrete way and with your support by being here tonight, with more Bradley Mannings, there's a chance that we will have the democratic constitutional republic we were meant to have and may sometime be.
I want to thank you for joining us this evening at the Humanist Hall. I want to thank David of the Humanist Hall for making this possible. Arismendi Bakery has donated a lot of bread, a lot of great pastries we've been eating. Please take some of it home with you. We'll have extra. Tomorrow night, WikiLeaks, the collateral murder video, will be shown at Union Square by Rural Can't Wait at 7:30. We're going to be out in the streets of San Francisco at 2 o'clock in San Francisco to support Bradley Manning across from City Hall in front of the Veterans Building.
On Saturday
at 2 p.m., march and rally for Bradley in front of City Hall. We're going to meet and we're going to march to Union Square on Saturday at 2 p.m. And again, Rural Can't Wait will be showing the WikiLeaks video we saw tonight in Union Square tomorrow night at 7:30. I want to thank Mark A. and Mark Burnett and IndieBay.org, our amazing tech team, for making this possible. Woo! As of 4 o'clock this afternoon, the Humanist Hall didn't have internet connectivity. I want to thank the tech support person I worked with in India to make the internet work here today. He said his name was Jimmy. I didn't believe him. And finally, to the co-sponsors and endorsers of this event tonight, Bay Peace, Veterans for Peace Bay Area, Wellstone Democratic Renewal Club, Code Pink, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Americans for Peace and Justice, Asian Americans for Peace and Justice, sorry about that, National Lawyers Guild Military Law Panel, Rural Can't Wait Bay Area, Grandmothers Against War, War Resisters League West, The Answer Coalition, and Bay Area United for Peace and Justice. Support Courage Resist, volunteer. We have all kinds of exciting things to do in our office right down the street. We need your ongoing support. Have a good night. Hang out for a while, eat some pastries, and meet your neighbors.